But I think it's safe now to say that there is a relationship between worker training programs and environmental justice. Worker training programs emerged at the same time as the EJ movement. In fact, EJ advocates recommended the creation of federal working training programs. Training programs have evolved to reach out to trainees from disadvantaged communities, and these trainees transform their lives, benefit the communities, and protect the health and the environment. Sharon mentioned earlier, NIHS worker training program is one of the premier training programs in the U.S. It serves as a national training model of EJ. It helps provide for the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of residents in the decision-making process. And the program provides for job creation, protection of workers on the job, and support for a healthy, sustainable community. This is a report that we produced, the National Clearinghouse produced, to evaluate the environmental justice implications and benefit of hazardous waste worker training programs. That's a tongue twister. That's where you can find the website. It's the National Clearinghouse website, and we have a few copies in the back. And to achieve this goal, we conducted stakeholder interviews, literature reviews, and also data analysis. We found that, of course, we haven't alliterated this, that hazardous waste worker training programs are the embodiment of environmental justice, as it provides a fair treatment of residents of disadvantaged communities by providing the residents with the knowledge and training necessary for the workers to meaningfully participate in addressing the environmental concerns in the community. They have completely changed the lives of participants in the program, many who were underemployed, unemployed, or ex-offenders that live in these communities. They also provide the residents with the knowledge and skills to prepare them for long-term career opportunities in environment assessment and cleanup, emergency response, and construction and other careers. And the majority of the programs we found are African American. For example, 86% of the trainees in the Minority Worker Training Program are African Americans. And again, we haven't really stressed this enough. Life skills training is a fundamental part of these training programs. Similarly, the social support and networking that these trainees receive have also helped them to be successful. The graduates of the workers have used their newly gained knowledge on safety and health to improve the public health and environment for their family, relatives, and community. There's so many success stories that it's hard to choose which one's the best one to do, but another one of the success stories is Launa's Minority Outreach Program. The Launa Training Education Fund is a training arm of the Laborers International Union of North America. They have been a grantee of NIHS WTP since 1989, and the Minority Outreach Program was incorporated in 2005 into their hazardous waste worker training program. Prior to that, they were part of the Minority Worker Training Program. As part of the environmental worker training, similar to other minority worker training programs, they teach life skills, hazardous waste worker training, and general construction training. They prepare the trainees not only for them to be competent on the job and successful on the job, but also to help them to retain employment by minimizing the impact that personal problems and situations may have on worker success. The following are three of their training centers that conduct minority outreach program training. One is New England Labor Training Academy in Pomfret, Connecticut. They partner with community-based organizations such as the Hartford Jobs Funnel to recruit as well as to place workers for jobs. 76 individuals have completed the program, and there's 82% placed into jobs. So next is the Francis Greenfield Labor Training and Apprentice Program Institute here in Washington, D.C. They work in collaboration with community partners and employers on projects such as the building of the National Parks Baseball Stadium here. They have a 90% placement rate, and 70% of all apprentices here in D.C. area enter through the MOP. Between the 2010 and 2011, due to economy, only one training cycle was held. Out of the 500 applicants, only 11 were chosen, but all 11 graduated and have been integrated into the Construction Craft Laborers Apprenticeship Program and are currently working for union contractors. Last but not least, the Laborers Training and Retaining Trust Fund of Southern California. It focuses on integrating participants into their apprentice program, and job placements are organized with focus on improving the graduate skills and employability. It also has a vocational English for speakers of other languages to better prepare ESL workers to be successful at their work. And it has a 93% job placement rate. As mentioned earlier, our report also provides several research recommendations. We recommended that, for instance, as you know, mentioned earlier, a lot of these trainees recruited are African Americans. So we think that more effort should be made to reach a greater population, other minority populations, such as Native Americans, Pacific Islanders, and also women. And also, more effort should also be made to involve additional historically Black colleges and universities and other minority academic institutions. NIHS has made several actions to implement to address these recommendations. For instance, for these two recommendations, NIHS has encouraged an expanded relationship between awardees and minority organizations, and they also have leveraged alliances that awardees have with other minority groups. And those are some of the awardees that have relationships with other minority groups. Again, I can't repeat this enough. Life skills training and environmental justice is a course on environmental justice is essential and is extremely important for the success of the programs in order to help trainees be prepared for, you know, not only for their own lives but also for their job. We also recommend that worker training programs should have a screening mechanism built into the recruitment process to ensure that the individuals who are recruited to the program should have the commitment necessary to succeed in the program. This screening mechanism is incorporated in a lot of the NIHS awardees, and we feel that, you know, if awardees, because a lot of these are ex-offenders and underemployed, they shouldn't be wasting the money if they're not, you know, committed to really changing and transforming their lives. And this is, you know, a screening mechanism is the best way to ensure that. We also recommended that the federal government agency should consider adding a quantitative and qualitative performance measures in their evaluation process to better assess the progress that the program has made in achieving its environmental justice goals. In the 2009 Hazardous Waste Material Worker Health and Safety Training request for applications, NIHS did include a set of evaluation questions that would ensure that the goals of the Minority Worker Training Program were met by the grantees. In addition, NIHS has been promoting the Worker Training Evaluation Workshop that is scheduled for the fall of 2012. As federal agencies and training providers direct more funds and focus to green jobs training, priority should be made to recruit the residents of the communities that are facing environmental justice concerns. And also, as government strongly encourage employers contracted to conduct environmental cleanup to hire local residents who live in those communities that has gone through the worker training programs. In response, NIHS has continued and expanded their current activities with the Blue Green Alliance. They have reached out to partners with major contractors and corporations, and awardees have also been provided funding to train trainees on weatherization, energy retrofit, and other green job training. And finally, but not least, and there's a lot more recommendations that are in the report, local governments should encourage and provide the incentive of small businesses and local entrepreneurs to locate in low-income minority communities, as they are more likely to hire locals than outside help. And so in conclusion, hazardous waste worker training programs not only improve the lives of residents of Asia communities, but it also has improved the lives and the health and safety of the Asia community itself. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Joy while you're still up there?
It's easier crowd than Mike's twins.
Hi. I'm allowed
yes. Out of the 500 people who applied, only 11 were trained. That they go through the screening process, you know, a lot of testing to pick out the ones that are truly committed to graduating.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it also has to do with how many can they place.
Yes.
If the economy is bad, you don't want to try to bring in 200 people and you can only place, you know, 15 to 20, so they really are looking at those issues.
And to add, a lot of them, you're right. They want to make sure that they do have the jobs lined up before they train, because there's no point of training people if there are no jobs.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that, you know, and some of the recommendations, there have been requirements for federal contractors, for example, and I think different jurisdictions occasionally, you know, you have to hire and pay prevailing wages, or you have to do union, you know, contracting or whatever. Have there been examples where either at the federal level or at the state level or local level, there have been requirements that if you're going to go in and do a brownfield cleanup, for example, you have to hire locally trained, you know, graduates of, you know, program. I mean, has that been incorporated as far as you know?
As far as, I'm not quite sure, but I want to kind of defer to my colleague Tim Fields for this question, but I want to say Savannah River, one of the DOE cleanups, they are required to hire locally, to train locally, and hire those people. So there are instances where, you know, contractors are hired because they are committed to training.
And that was based on the Department of Energy requirement that required them.
Yeah. Just to add the other, I know that EPA, and Sharon's aware of this too, that EPA now is trying to look at putting language into its contracts for contractors to require that local individuals who go through these training programs are given first preference or hiring at the local level for environmental remediation done at the local level. So that's something they're pursuing right now, trying to get more local hiring by the contractors who are giving these cleanup contracts.
And one other thing, from all of the material that I've seen for the Minority Worker Training Program specifically, they have two major areas where the local hiring ordinances, most of them have been in a union-based programs, but they've also been doing these community benefit agreements as the new local vehicle to make sure that individuals are hired to do this. And so one of the things that community-based organizations are requiring when people come in and want to do work in their communities is that they want to make sure that people are hired locally to do it. They want to have communities involved in the redevelopment process. And I know we had this session at the Environmental Justice Conference in Detroit, where I think it was Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice and Green Door Initiative and the local apprenticeship program have worked together, and they were able to include language in that community benefit agreement where they would at least have 20% local hire for some of the projects that are going on in that area. So those are some of the vehicles that are actually being used for some of these programs. Any other questions for Joy?
Thank you.